Hold the Mic is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard.
You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios Speak Boise and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios,
speak and be heard. This podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communication experts and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs, as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com/Boise or call 208-IMPRINT. That's 208-467-7468.
It's time for a new episode of Hold the Mic with Jenna and Lexi.
Hold the Mic.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Hold the Mic.
It's Jenna and Lexi, and we know we've been a little MIA recently, busy with school and dance.
Football and
all that fun stuff.
All the fun stuff. But I mean, that really just kicks off a whole new beginning of our school year and going into Lexi's senior year, my junior year. It's exciting. But we're back with another episode, and we have a very, very cool guest today. Someone that has definitely impacted me, and he probably doesn't even know it. But first, we're going to start off with a couple segments to get the podcast episode started. So I'm going to be doing them this week, starting with who is on my radar. So again, it's our athlete of the week. I know it's been a little bit since we've done an episode. But with football season starting and Boise State being 1-1 so far through the season, I really wanted to shout out Steph Cobbs. He's also widely known at Boise State as Static. Yep. That's how many people know him. But he scored a special teams touchdown last week against UTEP and ended up going for a 61-yard scoring reception, which definitely helped the team when we beat UTEP last Friday. It was 54-13 was the final score.
Agreed. That was a really, really good game for us. And also his punt return, the 81-yard
punt
return. That was huge.
So
and
good.
The last time that happened was, I think, Avery Williams in 2017. Mm-hmm. So
that's
really
what the people are saying.
Huge win for the Broncos.
Yeah, and it was our first home game last Friday, which was really awesome. But the week before, we were against UCF in Orlando. But we're excited, which brings me to the game of the week. We're recording this a couple days before this game, but this episode won't come out till the following week. But it's Boise State versus Oklahoma State. It's in Albertson Stadium, so another home game this week on September 18th, this Saturday. Super exciting. So, I mean, you won't hear this till after the fact, but still, I'm so excited.
We're back on the blue, and we're cheering again. And last week was literally the best thing ever, especially after not having it last year. Mm-hmm. It was incredible. So,
yeah.
I'm really
so
excited for this game. Should be a good one, probably
a huge
challenge,
one.
But
so many people are coming.
I know. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm super excited. So wrapping up the segments, let's get just right into the episode, Lex.
Yeah. So the guest we have on our podcast today has been someone who has greatly influenced my life. He's been a part of my life for 6 years, I think, since I was a junior in high school, which is so maybe 5 years, something like that. So crazy to think about, but he really got me through my senior year of high school when it came to dance, and he's helped me so much with just the mental aspect when it comes to being an athlete, and he's a mindset specialist, and he recently worked with our team, so we're really excited to introduce him. Welcome, James. Happy to have you on the podcast.
Jenna, Lexi, thank you for having me on. I'm super grateful to be here.
Oh my God. I'm so, so excited for you to be here. Yeah, like Lexi kind of mentioned, James recently came and he came to one of our practices, which it was a 3-hour practice and took up every minute of it. I cried for about 3 hours that day because of the impact that he had, but I really want to get into that. So James, to start off the episode, will you just kind of share all the hats that you wear, everything that you do, what your job is basically?
Yeah. So I work with entrepreneurs, athletes, entertainers, executives on their mindset, right? When you look at anything or anyone who's done something at a high level, they don't just have the skill, but they have the mind to go along with it. And if you don't look at things a certain way, then external noise can get in the way and interfere with who shows up and how you perform and what gets done. And it comes down to how you talk to yourself. How do you set your mind, right? And so I work with people all over the world on how to organize their mind, how to think deeper, how to break through fear and achieve the goals that they set out to do. And in your case, it was sports related and really understanding and navigating your mind so that when pressure's on, you don't cave, you actually show up and meet the demand that of the moment. So yeah, that's in a nutshell what I do.
Absolutely. How did you kind of get started with all of this? Like how, start from the very beginning. How did you?
That would probably be birth.
The mind is powerful.
My parents were such a great support system for me. They've instilled some pretty phenomenal values, ones of hard work, commitment, integrity, empathy, listening, understanding. Dad, one of nine kids, grew up very, you know, in a competitive nature and wanted to always stand out. In order to do that, you have to work really hard and you have to sacrifice. So I learned that from him. My mom had some pretty heavy trauma happened to her in her life, lost a majority of her family at a young age. Mm-hmm. And she's had to endure that. And she taught me patience and empathy and understanding. And without them, I wouldn't be who I am today. Building on that foundation in high school, I did a lot of sports and even in middle school, played football. So happy to hear that the Boise's capitalizing on some momentum.
Of course.
And yeah. And so like, being in leadership positions in sports, you quickly realize that if I'm ever going to have any influence on the group, I have to first influence myself. I have to be willing to do what no one else is willing to do so that when I ask other people to do it, there's no conflict, there's no hypocrisy. And by doing that, I just built a reputation of being someone who's dependable, who's reliable. And because I listen and really try to connect with people, I kind of cultivated a skill set of being able to say the right thing at the right time. And people would take what I'd say and suggest in high school, and they'd go home and work on the problems that we were talking about, and they would fix them or they would work through them. And they'd come back and tell me like, hey, what you said really helped. And I'm like, awesome. That's great. And they're like, you need to do this for a living. And I'm like, I don't even know what this is. This is just helping people.
Right.
And so that was like high school. And then in college, I was trying to figure out what to do. Being that I played sports, physical therapy made the most sense. Got into the kin classes and had a professor who taught mental performance. And this is where the whole trajectory of my life changed. Mm-hmm. In those classes, I was just mind blown every day on the connection that the mind and the body has and how we can create who shows up in this world and how our brain works and how much power we actually have that most people don't even realize. And I started thinking, man, people need to know this information. Mm-hmm. And I'm just sitting there just taking notes. And then I would start sharing that with my friends and they'd be like, wow, that's really interesting. And then I started thinking, well, who else could I share this with? And this was right around the time where I started realizing that quote unquote life coaching or any sort of coaching was an actual profession. And I'm like, I think I could do that. Mm-hmm. So I started calling myself a coach, started working with friends that knew me for $20 an hour at my house in my office. They would come over, knock on the front door. We'd have a session and then they leave. And that grew to working with high school sports teams, which then grew to me going door to door and selling my services to the corporate side and getting clients that way. That then stemmed into referral into now I've worked with over 7,000 people from 8 different countries.
It's so wild. And that's such a cool story too. You mentioned the high school and college teams that you worked with. Can you name a few of those?
Yeah. So UNLV cheer and dance, which was obviously I went to UNLV. So that was most hit home for me. Yeah. you guys obviously now, mostly with high school, as far as dance goes, Seton, Cherry Creek, Lake Washington, Coronado, Foothill, basic high school, to name a few that come off the top of my head.
Yeah. Which, might I add, are all very top performing right. teams or have taken first at nationals within the past couple years.
Huge competitors, right.
Because right. of that mental aspect of it all.
It's true.
I mean, and I went to Coronado, and that's how I originally met James, and they've won nationals the past couple years, and I would say it has a lot to do with that mental aspect and how James has, like, helped my team and then now former team mm-hmm. and now current mm-hmm. team, too.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
A full circle moment for sure.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Something that I'm going to kind of be referring to things that you talk to us about just because it had such a huge impact on me. Like, I don't know if you realize that. Obviously, you saw me crying the whole time, but still, it had such a huge impact on me. And one of the things that you kind of touched on in your discussion with us a few weeks ago was imposter syndrome.
Yes.
And I think that is something that is so prevalent within not only athletes, but just people in general within their career, like workforce. Why is that such, like, I don't know how to word this. I guess it's like, why does that happen? Like, why is it easier for people to fall into that, like, self-doubt hole? Like, why is it so hard for us to believe in ourselves? It's so much easier to just fall into that, you know?
Yeah. So it's a human tendency. I mean, any type of fear is human. And the four main fears that really block leaders, you know, they have fear of success, fear of failure, fear of rejection, and then fear of being a fraud, which is imposter syndrome.
Right.
And researchers call that, like, intellectual self-doubt. And I think we all have self-doubt to some degree because of how much we compare ourselves to other people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times people will say, I need to stop comparing myself to other people. And I know what they mean, but your brain isn't, it's really hard not to do that. And so you break comparison into two types where most people compare up. So they compare themselves to people who are farther along, who, you know, are more successful, mm-hmm. who dance better, who right. perform better, who have more money, and then we feel inferior. But oftentimes what we avoid or don't realize that we don't do is compare down, where we forget how far we've come and realize that we are actually ahead of, you know, X, Y, and Z, whoever we're comparing ourselves to that is not at our level, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to, like, check ourselves on where we're comparing. Are we comparing up or are we comparing down, and leverage those when needed?
Yeah.
I don't think it's bad that we compare ourselves up because that it can inspire us, that can pull us forward, that can challenge us to dig deeper. But then it gets destructive when we're doing that all the time because we're not appreciating the growth that we've had along the journey that we've taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Will you, for people who don't know, will you define imposter syndrome? I feel like that's like, you know, some people don't know.
Right. Imposter syndrome is believing that there's other people who are qualified, more qualified than you to do what you've been tasked to do. So in your situation with the dance team, an imposter syndrome thought could be, I don't deserve to be on this team. There's other more qualified, better looking, better dancers that should be here than me. So who am I to believe that I deserve to be here? Like, that would be an imposter thought. And for a long time, people think that that's negative. Like, I don't want to have those thoughts. But we also have to see the truth in when those thoughts arise, because sometimes we're going to be in situations that we've never been before. And in those situations where there's a lot of uncertainty, we're going to compare ourselves to people who are better than us in those areas, right? That's a normal thing, and that's a real thing. And there's some truth there. Where we have to learn to navigate is, it's okay to have the thought. It's not okay to let that thought control the action that you need to take in order to get the goal that you've set out to get. Mm-hmm. And that's where most people fall off. They just get caught up in the thought loop, and then they find evidence, more and more evidence as to why they don't deserve to be where they're at. And then they sabotage their success in that area. So then they don't hit the trick. They don't show up to practice because they'd rather control the rejection rather than risking it all and not being quote unquote good enough, so that everyone else accepts them and gives them the praise that they're looking for.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's so interesting to me.
It is. I think going off of that, kind of the aspect of fear and kind of how people approach fear. And I know some people are like, well, I want to be fearless, or I am fearless, or they're scared of being fearful of something. And I know you've taught me how to kind of like take control of that. Will you kind of explain that and your kind of take on it and how you can approach fear?
Some of the most successful people that I know are the most fearful. They just use fear as a driver, not a controller. Mm-hmm. When people say, I want to be fearless, well, what you're really saying is you don't want to feel the fear. But fear is embedded into your psyche for safety. If you didn't have fear, you would just do dumb things and you'd put your life at stake every day, right? So fear is there to just alert you to newness. There's a potential of danger here because we've never been to where we're about to go. And so the mind is preparing you for what's to come based off your past experience. And so when you understand that that's the purpose of fear, and you don't run from it, but instead you sit with it and realize its true intention is to help you, then you can start asking questions around when it started, around how can I leverage what it's giving me into drive to be better, or to not give up, or to be more resilient, especially when challenges come our way or pressure is on. So the goal is never to be fearless. It's just to be able to feel the fear and use the momentum that the emotion generates to funnel it into action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
It's so interesting. I remember I was just looking at my notebook because I remember you said a quote. I know, I live by this notebook now. But I remember you said a quote to us, and it was, fear only goes away when you're not growing. And after you told us that, I literally went home and I wrote it on a board on my wall. And it's like right next to my door frame, which I would love for you to talk about the Michael Phelps and door frame kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll get to the Michael Phelps thing, but the quote, the reason why it's so true is because if you're not experiencing any fear in your life, then you're not stretching past your comfort zone.
Yes.
And you're not allowing yourself to fear the uncertainty that can come from you getting bigger, going for more, or seeing what else you're capable of. And then if you're living in that space, then you're restricting how much you can serve other people. The more you grow, the more wisdom you get. The more wisdom you get, the more impact you can have, because you have information that can help people that were in your position or that may be in a similar position. And through your story, through what you've learned, they can now leverage that information to be better or get through what they're struggling on. Mm-hmm. So it's just all around, it's scary to grow, but it's necessary if you ever want to create impact or achieve anything of significance. Now, Michael Phelps, one of the greatest swimmers of all time, the most decorated Olympian of all time. This is a true example of how people at that level don't waste time. They're so intentional about who they're crafting, what they're thinking, who they're being moment by moment. And you have to be if you're going to perform at that level. And he's big on mental health. He's big on, you know, just training your own mind. And one of the things that he does that's so simple, so basic, all of us do it every day, but attaching something like this to something that we do every day is such a powerful exercise. Michael Phelps, anytime he walks through a door frame, will give himself an affirmation of, you deserve love. You are a powerful person. You can do whatever you set your mind to. Whatever affirmation or philosophy you really want to ingrain into your mind so that it's just there all the time, every time. He does that intentionally. He's putting that into his mind. And if you think about how many times you walk through a door frame a day, you know, 50 plus.
At least, right?
At least. And so that's 50, at least 50 affirmations that you, through your own voice, through your own intention, through your own energy, are using to create a version of you that can withstand challenge.
Yeah, I have a question on that with I feel like athletes and humbleness, because I feel like that's a very big component and aspect that I notice with a lot of athletes. And maybe it's like, there was an NBA player, I can't remember his name, he's on the Milwaukee Bucks, but he was talking about focusing on the past is like, in order to be humble and sit in humbleness, you need to focus on the present. So by giving yourself those affirmations or trying to use the mental aspect of athletics and sports to be your best self, where do you kind of find that balance, or how can someone kind of find that balance of living in the present, keeping that humbleness, but still working hard and being great as well?
Yeah, that's a cool question. So humility is important, because if you get too arrogant, then you actually prevent yourself from learning, right? And being humble doesn't mean you're being weak.
Yeah.
Being humble means you know what you're capable of, but you're also aware that you can get better. And that's like a big, big difference, right?
Yeah, totally.
It's just complete mind shift. And what a lot of people think is that if I tell myself these things, then I'll become too confident. And it's like, no, what you're doing is you're relying on your own internal voice over everyone else's external voice.
Yeah.
So many of us listen to the wrong people. We allow the noise that comes from praise or from hate, you know, speech, or from people who don't agree with us, to get into this sacred part of us and then grow roots and bear fruit that then destroys us from the inside. And so we have to be very protective over what we allow in. Not everybody has our best interest at heart when they say things, right? And so we have to vet people. We have to seek out individuals who care about our growth and who we can trust, and then open up to what they have to say, so that we're not just so wide open that what everyone says gets to us and then takes us out of that moment. So that's kind of like the humility piece. To the past and present thing that you're talking about, athletes oscillate between the past and the future all the time. Very rarely can they ever get present unless they train their mind to. And the best of the best know how to do that. But if you're focusing too much on the past, then you're bringing past situations into the present. And most people focus on negativity in the past. So if you bring that from the past into the present, you're only creating more of that negative past right now in this moment. When you're using affirmations, you could be leveraging a positive past experience and bringing it into this moment to create more of that positivity. And that's better. Ultimately, creating a language and a narrative and a story that you want to be real right now begins with what you say right now. The word is what creates the space, and the space is what you occupy. And as long as there's a strong, dominant story in your mind, and that's the loudest voice, no external noise can penetrate that story. And so really good athletes, regardless if they miss a shot or they fall on a trick or they make a mistake, they have really strong self-talk that keeps that bubble of who they are intact. That just because they make a mistake, they don't go to, oh, I'm a mistake or I'm a failure. They go, a mistake was made. That doesn't affect who I am and my ability to bounce back. And that's why they're able to keep at such a high level, even when they undergo mistakes or failures.
It's so wild to me, I guess, because as you're saying all of this stuff, I guess it keeps like coming into my mind how important and significant mindset is in sport. Obviously, like getting to the high school, collegiate, professional levels of sport is very hard physically, and you have to be skilled physically. But I think the majority of that comes from your mental practice and your mental strength. And I think that's so like fascinating to me, because I feel like while people are like, oh, you just have to believe in yourself, it's more than believing in yourself. Like, I feel like realizing the science behind it and the impact that it can have on you is so much more important than anything.
Right. And it's a daily thing.
Like, oh, totally.
It's not just, I set this up, okay, now I can coast for 10 years. Like, this is a daily war against yourself.
And on the topic of daily, will you talk about the journal practice that you kind of gave to us?
Yeah. And like the components of it?
Yes.
Or just the, yes, the fact? Okay. Yeah. So journaling, I used to not be a fan of. Like, I used to think, oh, that's a diary. That you only do that when you're in middle school.
Right. Talking like, about your crush.
Right. Yeah. Like, why do I need to write things down? Like, no, I can remember it. And that was my biggest downfall, because research shows that we have 60,000 thoughts a day. And I don't know about you, but there's no way you're going to remember 1% of those, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's so much that goes on. And so if you have a good idea and you're like, oh, I'm going to remember that, chances are you're not. So just the odds are just not in your favor.
Right.
Right. So knowing that, that's an incentive to journal. Another incentive to journal is, how do you track your progress? How do you know if you're getting better? How do you know what's working and what's not working? Mm-hmm. How do you know what system you need to follow in order to get a result time after time? And if you're really about mastery and you're about being the best that you can be in your industry or in your sport, journaling becomes essential, because it's documentation of your journey that you can track at pivotal points, and you can find wisdom in there and recipes that you then can share with your team, or you can look back on years later and be like, oh my gosh, I forgot about that. And a piece of information that you wrote 5 years ago could unlock a limiting belief that you're having right now. I can't tell you, I don't know if you can see the journals up here behind the Kobe book.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
So those are filled with like session breakdowns. When I have a session with somebody and mm-hmm. like I write down what worked, what didn't work, what do I need to shift? Mm-hmm. I'll go back through those and I'll like say, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that exercise. Oh, that's a really good one. I haven't done that one mm-hmm. in a while. Oh, and like I'll pull that from my past.
Yeah.
And use it right now in the present and even in the future, right? So there's many benefits to it. Self-reflection being probably my favorite. But really, when you're journaling, you want to journal right after something you're wanting to get better at, right? So if you give a business presentation or you have a practice, ideally you want to do it when the content's fresh, when your mind is right out of it, right? And you want to write down something along the lines of a good, better, how. What did I do good? Most people's first question is, what did I mess up on?
Yes. It's natural.
And it's natural, right? And so when our mind goes there initially, not that we shouldn't go there, but when it goes there first, we're beating ourselves down mm-hmm. to then build ourselves up.
Right.
When we're noticing what's good, we're building ourselves up, giving us momentum and more openness to receive what we need to be better at, right? So that's why we start with a good. Mm-hmm. The better is framed as better, not what did you do wrong?
Yes.
So that we maintain optimism throughout the journey, mm-hmm. because no matter how good you are, you can always get better. Mm-hmm. Always.
Yeah.
Every time, right? So we acknowledge what we did good. We build ourselves up there. Then we say, okay, but no one's perfect and we can always evolve. So what can I do better? And you write down what you can do better. I could do better on the turn. I can do better at finding my receiver in a certain, you know, defense coverage. I can be better at asking questions in my job presentation because I felt like I was talking too long. Like, improvements.
Right. Yeah.
We don't work this hard to stay the same. We work this hard to continue to grow and find deeper levels of who we are. Mm-hmm. And then the last piece, which is the how. How do you plan on improving? So we've gone through goods. We have betters. Now, how are we going to make that better happen? Mm-hmm. And that's where you create a roadmap. That's yes. where you create your small goals. That's what gives you direction. And that's what brings more meaning to your practice, to your work, to your relationship. And there's an intentional piece of wanting to get better that keeps the drive alive. Because the moment we lose track of where we're going or we don't have a vision, we kind of fall apart. Mm-hmm. Like, us as humans need something to keep us going. And part of that is realizing that life is never ending. You can't, there's no end until it's over, mm-hmm. right? So no matter where you're at in the story, there's still another page that then builds into another chapter.
Wow, that was so good. That was so good.
I feel like I'm getting another session right now as we're interviewing him. I'm like, darn it, where's my notebook?
I know, it's so good.
But I think going off of that, kind of, there's like, and what Jenna was talking about earlier is there is like this mental aspect when it comes to sports and being an athlete. But also, I know we're going to take this with us for the rest of our lives and apply it. And with imposter syndrome, like, I know in my future career, I'm going to feel that. And now I have these, like, keys and tools to be able to work through that in my future career in sports and journalism and wherever I kind of end up. But you work with a lot of people, obviously. Yeah. Have you ever had, I'm sure with the people you've worked with, you've had a ton of breakthroughs mentally, but yeah, us. Jenna's like, I cried so much. I'm like, James has seen me cry so many times before. I'm like, I promise it's okay. But has there ever been a certain like breakthrough that you just remember and you always come back to it and you're just like, this is why I do what I do?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
It's hard so to probably pinpoint just one.
Right, totally.
I know. And I, so before I answer it, what I'll say is like me sharing these breakthroughs isn't the power of me.
Right. Oh mm-hmm. yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I just want to be clear. Cause it's not like it's the power of the environment that both myself and the audience co-create mm-hmm. that allows for the safety.
Yes. That's what I wanted
to
say.
Open.
Yes.
Yeah. And comfortability.
And then, it's a vulnerability kind of thing. Like, I'm not really one to cry in front of people. And then I was crying for 3 hours. But I think there was such an environment that was set up for vulnerability and for like self-reflection almost to allow for those breakthroughs. So I completely understand what you're saying.
Right. So for those of you who haven't like seen a breakthrough or heard a breakthrough, like that's the environment that needs to be created in order for a breakthrough to happen. Because unless someone feels open, they're not going to tell you what needs to be said in order for that breakthrough to occur.
Totally.
So trust needs to be there. Trust that if you tell me something, I'm not going to use it against you, that I'm going to, and that you trust me enough to help you with that. And then together we go on this journey that ultimately leads to a breakthrough. Right.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the context to breakthroughs. But I mean, gosh, one comes to my mind.
Think here.
I know. And I'm sifting through like all of them at the same time. So there's one, I was leading a course or training at a company, and I was like an in-house performance coach for 150 of their employees. And part of my responsibility was to onboard new employees. Mm-hmm. And we're on break, and this is day two, right? So it was a 2-day thing.
Okay.
We're on day two, lunch break. And I could just tell that this individual was off.
Got it.
Like they were just sitting in the corner and kind of looking very sad, head was down. And I just kept my eye on it, but you know, didn't want to interject. And then she gets a phone call and she's like frozen on the line based on what she just heard. And then she starts crying. And then she just mumbles a few things and then hangs up. And I'm like, what was that? Mm-hmm. So I walk over there and I don't know what's going on. I don't even know what to say at this point, but I want her to know that I'm there for her. Right. So I'm sitting down with her eye to eye or kind of like side to side. And I'm kind of like, hey, everything okay? Like, I didn't hear what was happening, but I'm just seeing your body language. And I just kind of wanted to check in. And she's like, I just got some really bad news. And I'm like, do you want to talk about it? Mm-hmm. She's like, not really. And I'm like, okay, well, I just want you to know I'm here for you if you do. And I know it's helpful to talk through these things so you're not harboring it inside and then it festers and grows into something that, you know, you can't control. And then she's like, I just found out that I had cancer.
Oh, no.
And that I have, you know, like the process of what that looks like. And it was pretty significant. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there, 25 years old. This woman's in her 40s. And I have nothing to say.
Yeah.
But I'm just there. And we talk about it. And she talks about how her life is going to change. And she tells me about all the things that she's going to have to sacrifice. And, you know, in that point, I just kind of asked her a few questions and reminded her of the strength that she had been demonstrating throughout the training. And within that 30-minute conversation, she walked out of there realizing that this was actually the thing that she needed in order to change the things in her life that she hadn't changed before. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if she would have pieced those things together if it weren't for that conversation at that time.
Yeah.
And what's powerful about that is not what I said, but what I did. Mm-hmm. Right? Sometimes breakthroughs don't come from questions. They mm-hmm. come from just sitting in the silence. And you know, that one just really stands out to me because I was really emotional after she left.
Sure. I know. I can't even imagine. Full body chills right now just listening to that.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And mm-hmm. I feel like it just goes to show how the environment and being vulnerable and open, mm-hmm. it all kind of like comes back together.
Totally.
Because I know our session with, like, we were all crying by the end of it. And we were all very open and vulnerable. And that's when I feel like our team's breakthrough happened mm-hmm. for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Right. And there's many different types of breakthroughs, right? Individual, collective.
Yes.
You know, I've seen breakthroughs in relationships where people don't talk to each other, live in different rooms. And then after a few sessions, like, their relationship is back to what it used to be, or business breakthroughs with like how much money someone thinks they can make. And then they make that in a month, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, oh my gosh. You know, like it's just, we create our own limitations based on what we've seen and what we hear is possible. Mm-hmm. So it isn't until we question those and challenge those that we get past them and actually create a new reality where we inspire other people who didn't think that that was possible to believe that now that's possible.
Right. And I think that is a perfect segue to talking about alter egos.
Oh, yeah.
Because this was something that, I guess it's like something that you're like, oh, just find your alter ego, like channel your alter ego, you know, but like, what does that actually mean? And if you don't have a personal connection to your so-called alter ego, that means absolutely nothing to you. So could you walk us through the process of creating one, please?
I'll walk you through part of the process just because it's a long process. Mm-hmm. And those of you who are listening, if you do like what you're hearing, would love to come in and help teach this in depth.
Yes.
Because this is something that has not only helped my business and my relationship, but of all the clients that I've been able to serve, like this is one of the most powerful strategies that mm-hmm. I use and teach and have realized. So if you look at, you know, someone like a Kobe Bryant, or you look at someone like a Serena Williams, or a Beyonce, there is a version of them that comes out in the hardest times that they face, right? Like when Kobe's in fourth quarter and they're down and they need a win, Black Mamba comes out. When Beyonce is on stage and she's performing in front of hundreds of thousands or just in front of crowds in general, Sasha Fierce comes out, right? And then when Marshall Mathers is so nervous that he's throwing up in the bathroom before he goes out on stage, mm-hmm. taps into Slim Shady, right? An alter ego is a handcrafted version of you that you can bring out on cue that can help you handle the pressures of your situation. Mm-hmm. You could have an alter ego for being a father. You can have an alter ego for being a CEO. You can have an alter ego for being a dance athlete, mm-hmm. right? It's applicable to all areas because you're human. And if you're human, you can think a certain way. And when you think that way, you feel a certain way, and then you do and be a certain way.
Yes.
And when you get clear on who you're wanting to be, attaching that to a story, attaching that to specific movements, anchor to past memories, and you name it, that's when it becomes real. And every time you think about it, you say it, you embody it, it gets stronger, it gets easier to access, mm-hmm. to a point where you can be from, hi, I'm talking to James right now, and then boom, I'm here, I'm a different person, I have a different energy, I think differently, I feel differently, I see differently, and this person can handle this interview now, or this person can throw that touchdown pass when the time is expired and I have to make it work, yeah. or when I have to deliver this presentation and no one else will stand up for it because they're too afraid and I have to have the courage to say what no one else is going to say, this is the version that can do that. Mm-hmm. That's in essence the alter ego.
Yeah. It's so wild.
It is. And I remember doing this exercise with you, oh my gosh, 4 years ago, and I still have, it's obviously changed as I've matured and grown and everything like that, but I find myself doing very similar things and having similar anchors or body movements that channel that same alter ego. And even when I was little and I was dancing, my mom would tell me, like, Lexi, you just have this alter ego that comes out whenever you perform, or whenever I would be on the soccer field or in a situation where it had to come out. I just never knew how to put a name on it or put a label on it and how right. to kind of create that. And so
right.
it's so interesting. Yes. And anyone yeah. can do it. And again, it's not just for athletes. It's for, I find myself like doing similar things before an interview or before I have to give a speech in class. And yeah, I'm the crazy person that like jumps up and down outside of the room before I have to give a speech, because mm-hmm. that's how I channel my alter ego. And I'm able yes. to have that confidence.
Yeah. Right. And a lot of people will rely on context for that context or environment to bring out a version of them. But rather than them being able to bring it out in any environment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, an athlete that plays soccer can maybe access that version of themselves while they're playing soccer because they want to win, and then the environment of what soccer can produce. But then after that, outside of it, they can't really do that, or they haven't tried, or they don't know that yeah. they can. Mm-hmm. But what you're talking about is like, the person I am on the soccer field that I like, the confidence, the conviction, the whatever, mm-hmm. I can bring that into my job, totally. My relationship at times. Like yes. it's applicable to all areas, yes. which is pretty freeing.
For sure. And I think it's just channeling that inner ego or alter ego, sorry, is it's just being able to manage those undesirable feelings. And like you were kind of saying, it's applicable to anything, which I think is so cool. And I feel like I have definitely never experienced an exercise like the one that you walked us through. And now every time I'm feeling, you know, a little nervous, a little anxious, a little whatever that I'm not wanting to feel, that's when you can really kind of channel it. And I think it's so, so interesting. Yeah, I've just never been faced with anything like that before.
Right. If you look at Kobe's story, it's so really cool to hear, like, you know, in his career, he was facing halfway, I don't know how early into his career, but at one point he was facing allegations over something that had happened at a hotel with another girl. And that took a toll. The media was eating him alive. His marriage was on the rocks. He mm-hmm. was just, it was eating him alive. And they were playing in a game and it was halftime and they were down and had no kind of, there was no one thought that they were going to win that game. And Kobe sitting in the locker room, thinking like, I can't handle this. I can't take all this media pressure and all the things that are happening at home. I can't handle it. I physically can't. Kobe cannot do this. And in that moment, that's when he invited this version of himself that could let go of that and step into something else. And he remembered Kill Bill 2 in that movie. If you've seen it, the assassin, the bad person in that movie, has a black mamba snake that kills people. And Kobe was like, I want to be like that on the court. So in that moment, he attached who he wanted to be to a memory that impacted him so much. He was like, I'm going to be the Black Mamba. Came out that second half, scored like 30, 40 points, won the game. And that was the birth of Black Mamba, right? So it's like,
so cool.
We're all in a moment like that. Mm-hmm. Whether we're going through a breakup, or the business is growing at such a fast rate, we can't handle it, or it's not going well, we can't handle it, or moving to a different city. It's just, we all have these challenges that we can navigate when we know how to shift into the character that we need to be in order to handle that situation.
Yeah. And I think in terms of everything that you talked about when you came and like did the discussion with my or with our team and then like with us right now, I remember writing it down and it was about neuroplasticity. And I wrote down, I think you said it, it says your brain is not cement. You can always rewire and shed your thinking. So like a snake. And I think that's so interesting because everything that you have talked about, it always comes back to that in the sense of your brain is not, your thinking and your mindset is never stagnant. Like it can always be changing. And I think that is so cool to me. And
it's so cool.
Yeah. It's just so interesting in the sense of like finding that alter ego and then changing your mindset in terms of sports, work, life, whatever. And it's just so wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to the snake thing, like if the snake does not shed its skin, it dies.
Yes.
If you don't shed the old version of you, metaphorically, you begin to die, right? Life isn't meant to be stagnant. It's meant to be a process, like a river that flows. The moment that water stops, it becomes toxic. The moment you stop growing, you become toxic. And then you get bitter and resentful towards other people who are growing. You get mad at them because part of you wants to, but you're too scared to. So then you live in this place of blame and victimhood that doesn't support your growth and or the people around you. And, you know, that leads to a place that you don't want to be in, a life that you never probably imagined you'd be living.
Yeah. I kind of have one more question before we maybe wrap up here, but for someone who athlete, non-athlete, whoever is wanting to kind of start this sort of journey with gaining their mental like confidence or channeling their inner alter ego, whatever it may be, what would be your biggest advice on where they should start?
Yeah. So I have a few resources that they can use, but I'll say that after I give them, some places to start. I would write down how you speak to yourself on a daily basis in the areas of life that you want to get better at. So like if your relationship is suffering right now with your significant other or your parents or you're in a job where you're not doing so well and you want to do better, what mental dialogue is happening in those situations? What do you tell yourself in those moments? Oh, I'm so stupid. I can't believe I made that mistake. Of course I made that mistake. I shouldn't even be here. Or this person doesn't love me. How could anyone love me? You know, like these types of words, this dialogue, I would write that down because awareness is the first step to change. You can't change something that you're not aware of, right? So we have to become aware of what's actually happening right now so we have a starting point. And then from there, realize what environments trigger that type of language. What is happening? Does someone yell at you? Are you in an intimate conversation talking about finances or talking about needs being met? And then that's what triggers that language. We want to understand what the environment looks like so that one, we have the awareness walking into that environment the next time, or that we can change environments and put ourselves in a more supportive, resourceful environment so we don't get stuck in the same emotional patterns that lead us to something that we don't want, right? So self-talk, environment. Then I'd write down, what do you want to happen in those environments? What do you want to be able to say to yourself? Who do you want to show up in those moments? And what would that person say to themselves in those heated moments? Write that down. And then the next time you find yourself in those situations and you become aware of when that negative thought comes up, that's the moment you have to shift to the other thought and insert it. Because if you're just relying on the brain to change, it's not going to. You have to intentionally, on purpose, introduce that new thought so that there's a cascade effect of positivity rather than an already well-oiled machine of negativity that just happens automatically, right? So we're becoming aware, peeling away, and then introducing a new way of doing something. And that over time builds a habit, builds a mindset mm-hmm. around a certain area, you're setting your mind to be a certain way in those areas, that then it becomes a habit, and then you're doing it so often that you don't even realize it's happening. It's just who you are at that point.
Just becomes a part of your lifestyle at that point.
Exactly. So I think that would be a little bit, and then also find a supportive group where they hold you up to a standard mm-hmm. of what you want them to. Like, you know, I think I gave this example when we were working together, but like for women, if you're in a, my brother, Brandon Collinsworth, shared this example with me. So I love this. Shout out to you, Brandon. He said, if you're in a room full of women and the goal of being in that room is to hold everyone to be a queen, and everyone saw everyone as a queen and nothing less, and someone did something that was unqueen-like, but everyone saw that individual as a queen, what would happen to that individual who temporarily stepped out of queenhood if she was surrounded by queens?
They would hold her accountable.
They would bring her back. Mm-hmm. And so many of us are not in the right environments that help us become the version of ourselves that we want to be. We'll hang out with people who may be less intelligent or, you know, less developed, or that we're better than, because we're afraid to look less than. Mm-hmm. And it's not even about less or more than, but that's just for context. Right. Like, find the environments where you're not the smartest in the room, where you aren't the most experienced, where you are the lowest on the totem pole, right? Mm-hmm. So that you have the most area to grow.
Right.
And if you do that, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised on how fast you'll grow.
Yeah.
I love it. James, you're so good. Thank you so much again for coming on. We seriously appreciate it. And
yeah, thank you.
Before we end the episode, will you shout out your podcast, your Instagram handle, everything to where people can find you?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Jenna, Lexi, thank you for having me on again. If you guys are on Instagram, it's James_Silvas, S-I-L-V-A-S. And if you want other podcasts to listen to outside of this one, Be That 1% podcast is on iTunes and Spotify. It's also linked in my bio on Instagram if you want to find it there. So would love to connect with any of you who are listening. Send me a DM, share your thoughts on what you gathered from this podcast. And if there's a way that we can work together in the future, let me know.
Yes. Yeah. I'm so thankful that I was introduced to you. I think you've just like, I mean, this is only my second time talking to you, and you've already made such an impact on my life. So
and he's coming back.
Yes, he's coming back. He's a regular now. We love it.
Boise fam.
Yes. Forever. Go Broncos. Well, thank
I'm
you, everyone.
I'm so excited. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. You're the best.
Yes. And thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of Hold the Mic. And thanks, James. We'll see you next
time. Thank you. That's a wrap.
Yes, it is.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Make sure to subscribe so you can stay up to date on Hold the Mic.
Be sure to follow our Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook accounts at Hold the Mic Podcast.